Hey, Lauren, do you want to hear about a good deal?
Well, yes, Mason, I would love to.
Good, because I have a deal with your name on it.
Tell me more!
Well, in that case, GoDaddy.com is offering the best deals of a lifetime. For only $3.59 a month for a year, you can get GoDaddy.com's Economy Package.
Amazing! What do I get with the Economy Package?
You get 250 gigs of bandwidth, 5 gigs of storage, and up to 500 email accounts. You can get your website up and running.
I can?
Yeah. When you check out, enter code MUGGLE, that's M-U-G-G-L-E, and save 10% on any order.
Can you spell that again?
Yeah, I can. That's M-U-G-G-L-E.
Wow. Do any restrictions apply?
Some restrictions apply. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
Today's MuggleNet podcast is brought to you by Borders. In May, thousands of Harry Potter fans descended upon New Orleans for the Phoenix Rising Conference. Borders was there to take in the sights and share a lively discussion of the series that has bewitched the world with some of Harry's most dedicated fans. Listen in and watch the action yourself. Check out the Phoenix Rising Borders book club discussion at bordersmedia.com/Harry Potter or click on the Borders banner at the top of the MuggleNet page.
Andrew's doing some technical stuff now. Yeah, you ready?
Sorry, we're ready to go. How's everyone doing today? Welcome to MuggleCast Live in Canton, Ohio.
What number?
We just called Cleveland, so it sounds like we hit a big town.
No, it's Ken.
How far away are we from Cleveland? 60 miles?
Hey, Brandon.
That's not too bad. It's the first outdoor podcast we've done ever.
Ben and I are veterans, Andrew.
Sorry, Spart. Forgot.
We did an event in Oak Park, Illinois, actually, where it was in front of like 4,000 or 5,000 people. It was outside. It was really cool. Being in front of a crowd that big is just one of those experiences that you don't forget.
There's a picture of you on your Facebook where the camera's behind them and it's looking into the crowd, and he loves it because there's like a light on. And he looks like a rock star playing his guitar.
Yeah, basically, it felt like one of the Remus Lupins for a second there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
First of all, has anyone not finished reading Deathly Hallows?
Yeah. Testing.
Because we are going to be discussing it today. So
we're going to be royally spoiling.
Get out of here.
Whoa.
As well as the people playing soccer back there, they're going to be royally spoiled if they
look like Harry Potter fans to me, so they probably will be.
I'm sure there's a few over there, Jamie. But anyway, there's been a lot of news lately. Of course, there was a web chat with J.K. Rowling earlier today. Anyone catch up on that? Yes. Okay, a couple people. If you all went on Muggle Night before the show, you would have caught up on the news. That's a good place to get the news. But so there's been a few things. Jamie, you found pretty interesting. You were really proud of some of the people in that web chat.
They asked some really good questions. Like, can you pull it up, Angie?
I'm pulling it up. I can't move far, okay, though.
We finally found that Dudley's, what his worst memory was when the Dementor was on him, was that he was seeing himself who he really was for the first time, and it scared him.
Yeah, and the one about Dumbledore's boggart as well, that it's his sister's corpse, Ariana's corpse. Yeah.
And that Dumbledore's, when he looks in the mirror of Erised, he sees his family, you know, happy and together and alive.
And you have to draw the Harry parallel there, because that's basically what Harry saw when he looked in. What other questions were there?
It was interesting that this was asked, because we had a little debate, is Snape a hero? And someone directly posed that question in J.K. Rowling. They said, do you think Snape is a hero? And she said, yes, I do, though a very flawed hero, an anti-hero perhaps. But he gave up he laid down his life for Harry, and J.K. Rowling says that's pretty heroic.
He must be a hero then, yeah. We had this huge debate about whether Snape was a hero or not. Have you put it online?
No, I can't remember what show that was.
Yeah,
if you heard it. Okay. Well, it was vicious at best, wasn't it?
Maybe. Like,
we also found out the Dementors won't be at Azkaban anymore. They're going to use some new system to protect Azkaban. Or they are using it now.
Yeah, the Dementors were part of the...
Your mic's not working, group.
My mic's not working.
Do you have an on switch?
No, there's no on switch.
Anyway, the Dementors were part of the corruption that the Ministry had, and so...
now that they're reforming the ministry, the Dementors are leaving away.
Where do they go? Where do you... Huh? So where do you send a Dementor? And they don't listen to you either, so it's like a troublesome creature. Anyone have any ideas?
Nope, no ideas.
What a very uninspired crowd.
Wow.
Come on. Come on.
They all go to Kansas, hang out with Ben.
Yeah.
Someone said to Joe, was Minerva in love with Albus? And J.K. Rowling said, no, not everybody falls in love with everybody else. It's amazing how people just pair these people together. And
It is.
Yeah, everything's a romance for some reason.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. I was a little sad. Like, Hedwig and Fox didn't get together.
Who?
Hedwig and Fox, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, she did explain that.
That was the travesty of the book series.
That's a joke, everybody.
She did explain that, and we've been wondering this, too. Someone said to Joe, why did you feel that Hedwig's death was necessary? And J.K. Rowling replied, the loss of Hedwig represented a loss of innocence and security. She has been almost like a cuddly toy to Harry at times. Voldemort killing her marked the end of childhood. I'm sorry, I know that death upset a lot of people. Anyone upset by the death here? I mean, it was just... Were you upset, or were you just like, ah, oh, Hedwig? Does that really exist? Hedwig's not...
There's a slight flaw in that plan, though, Ben, isn't it? My website.
I have a feeling that's not going to work out very well, though.
Yeah, the slight flaw being that she is.
Yeah.
You had theories, but Harry Hermione shippers had theories for the last three books, too, yeah. So...
But, Andrew, I know exactly what you mean when you say people just pair people together, because I'm surprised, you know, in the last book when Dudley's like, well, actually, Harry, you're a really great people. I'm surprised.
Dudley Harry Shippers?
Yeah, Dudley Happy Harry Shippers. They're going to come at some point. They may as well come now.
Yeah. Someone asked, does Winky still drink a lot of butterbeer? J.K. Rowling replied, she's dried out a bit now. I wonder if, she obviously doesn't have this all in her head. Like, she doesn't, it's like before this web chat, she wasn't thinking, does Winky still drink a lot?
There are a couple like that. Yeah, she makes it up. There's some more. There are loads like that.
But you can definitely tell reading it. I mean, she can do that, though, because she's J.K. Rowling. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the last book, so...
But then she has to write it down just to make sure she remembers that she's made something.
Yeah, exactly. Because she'll go... Oh, she did explain who was the person that displayed magic later in life. She said, I changed my mind about that one. That one actually did not happen.
So now we're allowed to do that anymore.
So basically, we wasted a lot of our lives.
Yeah, because we've been discussing
thinking about something that was a complete waste of time.
Yeah, we've been discussing that on tour. If you've heard the shows, we're like, duh, who was it? But now it's
not at all.
Yeah, we don't know at all.
What other questions were there?
I was trying to find.
We found out who killed Remus and Tonks, which is kind of sad. But
Bellatrix. Why does Bellatrix kill everybody?
I know Bellatrix did Tonks, and that was really sad. Serious.
Yeah, serious?
No, it's Remus, not serious.
about
I love that joke.
About the person displaying magic later in life, Joe said, my very earliest plan for the story involved somebody managing to get to Hogwarts when they had never done magic before, but I had changed my mind by the time I'd written the third book, which is pretty early on. So, someone here said it was Dudley.
Did you have changed their mind by the time she wrote the third book, not read it?
I don't know.
You'd think so.
That's a good question.
She writes it, then reads it.
She wouldn't read it until she changed her mind.
Who would it have been? Because she didn't say who it was. So she must have had this.
Hagrid?
Maybe it was a new character.
Not Hagrid, but Dudley.
Yeah.
Dudley, yeah.
I guess Dudley would make sense, but if he went into the school, how would he... What would that do? What would happen?
Perhaps she had a storyline for that we didn't hear about.
Yeah, exactly.
How did Voldemort get his wand back after he was in exile? Wormtail, desperate to... Emerson, didn't you say you called this in the book or something?
Yeah, in the book. If any of you guys have read MuggleNet.com's What Will Happen in Harry Potter 7, we did say that we thought Wormtail had to be at Godric's Hollow the night that Voldemort killed James and Lily, because he would have had to pick up his wand, and that's how Voldemort was able to kill Bertha Jorkins and Albania. And speaking of the book MuggleNet.com's What Will Happen in Harry Potter 7... Have to take a moment here because, you see, Ben and I spent the entire summer traveling around the country, standing up in front of bookstores, over 30 in total, including one in Canton here. And was anybody at that event, by the way? Okay, a few hands. And we basically would say some more theories, you know, about Harry living and Snape living Lily and Snape being a good guy and all that. And then we would get to the Harry is a Horcrux theory. And we would... proceed to then spend the rest of the event, probably about a half hour per event, just defending the theory from, you know, angry people. It wasn't a popular theory at all, but we held firm in our convictions, and we were vindicated in the book, and I just we're really proud of that.
You're
actually
very proud of this, aren't you?
Yeah, we really are. We took so much heat this summer. You have no idea. Every bookstore, as soon as we tell the theory, everyone would start snarling at us.
I can tell every time you tell that story because your voice levels out and it becomes emotion filled and that kind of thing.
Who has read?
It's very impressive.
Because I mean, there's one event in particular where there's a woman in the second row who, I swear to God, she was about to lunge at us in any minute.
Hold on 1 second. Actually, yeah. Sorry, I had my mic up to my face. My bad. Anyway, one last thing we wanted to point out here. Someone said to Joe, why did Dumbledore want Ron to keep his Deluminator? And J.K. Rowling said, I thought this was nice because he knew that Ron might need a little more guidance than the other two. Dumbledore understood Ron's importance in the trio. He wasn't the most skilled or the most intelligent, but he held them together. His humor and his good heart were essential.
Aww. Nice.
Which leads to our main discussion today. We wanted to talk about Ron. We've been covering a series of characters who've played big roles in the book. We've gone through Snape, Voldemort, Dumbledore.
And we talked about Hermione yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, today we're going to
talk about
Ron,
Harry tomorrow. Yeah, we're going to talk about Ron today. I've always seen quite a bit of mixed opinion on Ron. Some people like him. Some people think he's, you know, just tagging along with Harry, and Harry's a real hero. Some people think it's him who's the real hero because he has to put up with Harry's, you know, outbursts at times and how he's always been overshadowed by his family. And in the 7th book, there's a lot of, you know, changed things about Ron, how he runs away, and then Harry and Ron really, really, really reunite for the final time. We know they're going to be friends forevermore. And he helps Harry a lot, like when he just turns up at the pool when Harry jumps in with a Horcrux and saves the day. So, go on.
Oh, well, I was going to say, about Ron, what about his mom in book 7?
Give it up for Molly Weasley!
I can't even talk about
what
it anymore.
What you do, Mikey? Well, anyway.
Should we explain why we're laughing tangent completely?
Real quick. Ever since the first podcast we did on this tour, I've been saying Molly Weasley, because that's just an awesome scene, really. But then, I think 2 days into it, Ben took that. He took that line twice from me. And I was just like, dude, that's my line.
Mikey is...
So I've never seen
it. Missed out an important point of the story.
So then I proceeded to steal like 4 of his jokes.
Okay. That's the Mikey story. Day one happened. Then day two, Mikey stole everybody's jokes.
Day three,
we decided to steal jokes back from Mikey to get him back.
Mikey stole one of my jokes once, and from
there,
it was downhill.
I apologize.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
Oh,
and
yeah,
and we tried to get...
One time, Mikey went to the bathroom, and he didn't wash his hands.
That's a lie, sir.
Mikey, Bouchero. Don't call me on public like that.
I saw it.
And that's a lie. And you thought you heard enough about Mikey.
We had a member of the audience.
Everybody
has
skeletons in their closet.
The life and lies of Mikey Boucher. It's going to come out next.
Wow. That's the next MuggleNet book right there?
Yeah, we're going to print it soon.
Anyway. But back on the...
Back onto Ron Weasley.
Anyone surprised by how he sort of just left Harry and Hermione? I mean, they've been best friends for 7 years now, so...
Sorry,
my cup's low.
I thought
it was good that he was ashamed of it. I mean, that was good.
I thought that the whole fight... I mean, even though I understand there was a lot going on in their lives and they had every reason to fight with each other, but it really was immaturity that kept Ron from leaving, or that made Ron leave. Harry and Hermione would never get to a point where that would happen because Hermione is so much more mature than both of them combined that she would just drop it and she'd realize that there was nothing to come out of that.
And Ron's kind of whiny compared to Harry, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I also thought it was really kind of lame that he forced Hermione to choose between him and Harry at that point.
It's immaturity.
Like, that just shows his immaturity level. He's like, choose between me and him, and of course she chose Harry.
Because, you know, so you're in that position, you're usually the person who makes you make the choice is the one you're not going to go with just because they're making you choose. So
it is something you'd see someone who has the emotional range of a teaspoon saying.
But you sure it wasn't just the Horcrux that was causing them to do that?
I mean, the Horcrux probably exaggerated that, but he was still being a little whiny, immature baby.
Well, I think the Horcrux had everything to do with it. I think the reason that he got so upset was because he had been emotionally dragged down by that thing, by that object, and it just got to the breaking point where he got so emotionally drained to where it was affecting his behavior and his attitude towards Ron and Hermione.
Yeah, but even though
Harry and Hermione.
But even though that was extremely immature, he grew up towards the end of the book when he was like all about house elves' rights and all that kind of thing.
And he got
Joe answered that too. She said she talked about writing that scene, how she loved writing the scene, the kissing scene between
Ron
and Hermione.
Yeah
she did.
Ron finally earned his spew, I think she said.
Oh. That was a bad choice of
words. I don't think she put it that way.
Little pun there. Yeah, she did.
Find it.
I think she did.
I just
anyway, it. Going back to Ben and the Horcrux, I totally agree with you, Ben Shane, on that one. Simply because when Ron had to actually destroy the Locket Horcrux, it was him that had given the Horcrux enough of his emotions, kind of like how Ginny had given the diary lots of her own emotions and thoughts. And so it was him that saw, you know, the Harry Hermione regurgitate and his worst fears, and it was him that had to destroy that Horcrux rather than Harry. And it was also him that grabbed the sword because Harry jumped into a lake naked.
I agree.
With a Horcrux on.
See, that's such a Harry Potter thing to do, though, isn't it? Really? Like, hey, I'm alone in the middle of the woods. I'm going to dive into this freezing ice-cold lake by myself with no one watching so I can go drag down this mysterious ice
cold. Just because he's... With a piece
of... Why did he leave the locket on?
Yeah, with a piece of the Dark Lord soul around my neck.
Remind me of this. Who knows this movie? I want you to draw me wearing this. Only this. Titanic? See Titanic? Yeah.
No one here is old enough to see that film.
Like that scene right there is just, I mean, wouldn't any rational person just go back, hey, Hermione, I found the sword. Come on, help me. We're going to go to the lake. We're going to get it out together. We're going to think of a way to get down there. No. Just strips and jumps in. He's not that smart.
He's
lucky. I love Harry, and I'm glad that, you know, he won and he's alive and he's a good person. He's a great friend, but he's not that intelligent. He really isn't.
Smart people
don't dive naked into ice freezing cold lakes.
Now, Emerson,
by themselves in the middle of the night after chasing some ghostly doe into the woods like that.
Emerson, I have a question for you. Joe did happen to say, someone asked Joe the question specifically, when Harry died, where did he go? She said he died, dude. How do you handle that?
No,
that's
she didn't
question.
Say that. She said that
was
he
was
in a limbo.
That was Joe's words.
That was the question. Joe said in the transcript that he was in a when he thought he was dead, he was in a limbo between life and death. And we'd been saying for the last couple of podcasts now, there was a theory that we heard that we thought was really good, that the train station at King's Cross at platform 9 3/4 was like a sort of a purgatory. Like you decide by getting on a train which way you're going to go, living or dying. Harry chose life. So he didn't die in the book. He didn't.
No. And we said, Emerson, in another podcast, that you cannot come back after you die. So, and Joe's made that clear.
He couldn't have died, though.
Even with magic. Yes.
Exactly. Okay.
He was in limbo, like she said.
Yeah.
Anyway.
There's something I was going to say, now I forget. But another thing Joe said in this chat, I just wanted to go back to real quick.
Can we continue about Ron?
Yeah.
Does anyone have any points on Ron that they want to make about how he's changed throughout the books or him in the 7th book or anything like that?
Anyone want to come up and comment about Ron Weasley?
Anyone at all?
Anyone in the Weasley family?
Right here.
Maybe? Come on up.
Come on up.
You guys can be on MuggleCast.
Yay!
Say your name, where you're from.
Name, age, where you're from.
Social Security number.
My name's Meg. I'm 14, and I just wanted to say that my friend and I made predictions, and I totally called the Ron snapping thing. Because I said someone in the trio was going to snap, and I didn't think it was going to be Hermione. And my friend was like, well, it's not going to be Harry, because he already snapped in the 5th book. And so I said, it's going to be Ron. And I got so excited at that part, because even though he left...
It was bound to happen. A snap was bound to happen to Lee, since one of the characters didn't actually die. Which Joe said she's put a lot of thought into, killing one of them.
Well... Now that Emerson and I have had our chance to boast, she has. Anybody else? I mean, by all means,
come on up.
Give a thought.
We should start asking for proof on these boasts, Ben.
What's your name and where are you from?
I'm Sarah. I'm from here in Canton. The thing about Ron that really gets me is my friends always like, Ron's such a bad person, but people don't give Ron enough credit because it's so hard. You got to think about it. He's like got 6 brothers and sisters, and they're all so much cooler than he is. And and, you know... Well, except for Percy. But, you know, and he has to share everything. He grew up having hand-me-downs. And I think people just don't give Ron enough credit. So that's pretty much all I had to say.
See, I feel like Ron is just so incredibly normal. Yeah. Like, I feel like there's nothing about him that really stands out. Like, he just seems like a really normal teenager who'd been living a life with lots of brothers and sisters. Harry is normal in the sense that he's normal considering what he's been through, but not had a normal
upbringing.
He's like
the chosen one, too.
Well, I mean, that makes him a little different. Other than that.
Yeah.
Actually, he isn't different. He's completely different, isn't he? Because, like, everyone knows his name. I'd say that. And that's
I mean, his personality, though.
Oh, you mean from a normal teenager? Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Nothing to add.
Any other questions?
What about over there?
they're starting to build up. See, it's fun. Yeah, yeah. We're talking about Ron, so yeah. Come on up. See, it's funny because whenever we start asking for questions, there's nobody's like, oh, geez,
and then at the end, there's a flood of like 80 people who all of a sudden have a question.
So here, come on.
Hi, I'm Becca from Stowe. I'm 15. And I'd have to say that Ron is my favorite character, and he's always been my favorite character because he's normal, but he is able to put up with his best friend, famous Harry Potter, and even though he's belittled by every one of his friends, he stays loyal to them. And he went back to his friends, and I think that shows him being more mature. And also, like, he grew up because he almost lost both of his friends throughout, like, this book.
I think in a book.
In the words of Dumbledore, okay. It is our choices, Harry, far more than our abilities that determine what we truly are. The fact that Ron made the decision to come back is a great choice.
That's a good one, Ben. I was waiting for that one. But I was going to say, definitely showed Ron growing up a lot in book 7. You know, he got a book, he gave Harry a book, How to Charm a Witch. And we saw him do that with Hermione quite a bit, you know. There's a line in there that I started laughing at where Harry's like, you're just choosing her side so you can get on her good side. He's like, yeah, so. It's like, come on, really?
Okay. Yeah. Harry should know that by now.
Speaking of Hermione. Weasley. We got a Weasley here.
What's your name? Yeah, Weasley. What's your name? Where are you from?
Jenny from Watery St. Catchpole.
Yeah. I'm Angie, and I'm from Kent. And I'd like to say, who needs maturity? Fred and George, all the way.
Hey, does she mean point out George? One of them died?
Yeah, just George.
So I know. I do. And it's sad.
I know what you mean, though. It's like common sense doesn't come from... Well, it doesn't only come from maturity, you know.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it does.
I don't think even though Fred and George have a great sense of humor and it can seem immature at times, I don't think they're actually immature.
I agree. They're so clever as well.
There's different types of maturity.
They're smart.
I'll disagree.
Smart.
They're goofy. That's
you know poo? Really?
Yes,
they're businessmen.
Really.
They have acute
really,
business skills.
Mikey. Yes,
Mikey.
Really.
They say that if they give it a clever, a catchy name skill. Like that, they're good marketers. That's and they're going to sell more. They're going to make more money, which they can use to support their family. Thus, they're mature.
Okay. Okay.
And you don't see them making like any poor decisions, really. I mean, really?
No.
Really?
Really?
Okay.
Really, Mikey?
Concerning Ron, J.K. Rowling said that, oh, geez, I don't know. J.K. Rowling said the funniest moment she's written in the series is the one where Ron says really captures the scope and tragedy of the thing, doesn't it? And okay, I'm sorry. Which book was that from? Oh, was it? Okay, my bad. I just read it.
Read the books, Anderson. Okay.
See, I was thinking it was a book way back. I was trying to think of one of the first six. But anyway, the Picklepack Vultures are these girls in Picklepack who attack us whenever we're not on time with something. But here, come on up.
Which is happening quite
regularly. Don't get
near
me.
Wow.
I'm Joy. I'm 16 from Cleveland, and I just have to wonder if what would Ron see in the Mirror of Erised if he looked at it now that the battle's over and he's lost his brother, and would his desires change?
I think it would be his whole family together.
I think it would be his whole family, yeah.
Including Hermione.
Yeah, including Hermione.
I don't know though.
And Hugo.
And Rose.
Hugo
and Rose.
Because his family wasn't really that ripped apart. I mean, they lost Fred. Year. They lost Fred, but they regained Percy, though.
Yeah, but they also lost his
ear. Percy might as well have been dead. Who?
But they lost an ear.
But also, Ron didn't care. Ron, I mean, even though Ron obviously loved Percy as, you know, you can only love your brother, he was obviously more attached to Fred as he'd been living with him for a lot longer. Percy left when he was fairly young. So I think he would actually see his family back together again. And I think Hermione would be there too. Harry and Hermione. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, okay.
Next question.
My name's Andrea, and I'm from Columbus. And back to Ron growing up in the seventh book. Hi. Back to Ron growing up in the seventh book, I think one of the biggest ways he did that is that in the beginning, he was always really jealous of Harry and his, like, him being famous and everything. But in the seventh book, he sort of grows to accept that. He even makes jokes about it in the end, in the epilogue, where all the kids on the train are staring back, and he's like, oh, it's just me, I'm extremely famous. So I think he really comes to terms with Harry being famous and just being out of the limelight so long. Yeah. And then he gets his own, basically, real famous.
Yeah.
What I think happens is eventually you come to accept like what your role is.
Yeah.
And Harry's the Michael Jordan and Ron's like the
Scotty
the guy in the bench eating the hot dog.
Not even Scottie Pippen, Ben?
Not even Scottie Pippen.
Wow.
What about Luke Longley?
Hermione's Scottie Pippen. You kids, did anyone else actually follow basketball in the 90s besides me and Emerson?
I mean, can you imagine Scottie Pippen with bushy, long bushy hair? Anyone? No? That'd be amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's about Ron. Focus. Yeah, well, just hold on. We'll take random questions in a minute. That are on topic, of course.
Okay, hi, I'm Erin from Hudson. Okay, back to like Ron being a little bit immature. I think it was a lot harder on Hermione since she had to leave her parents and they had to forget her. And I think that'd be a lot more difficult on her. And I'm surprised she didn't throw that in his face, like, you know, I have to deal with that compared to you. So
I don't know. Did it really seem like it bothered Hermione at all that she?
I wonder if she's going to tell her parents ever that she.
Well, actually, in the web
chat, did what bother Hermione exactly?
That she
her parents,
arms on her parents, sent them to Australia, yeah, and told them they didn't have a daughter, which would get under some people's skins, definitely.
Yeah, but it doesn't.
Well, I think she's to the point where you realize what the mission is, and that you have to do whatever it takes.
Yeah, and Joe said in the web chat today that right after this whole thing ended, she went straight back to Australia and got her parents. Yeah.
I think that's so. It's a sign of extreme maturity. In order to be able to do that, you really have to be able to put other people in front of yourself and your wishes. You do. Desires.
I kind of don't think she really minded too much, considering we know she's kind of kept a lot from her parents in the sense of like Voldemort coming back and a lot of bad stuff happening in the Wizarding World and like what she, you know, gets into with Ron and Harry. Because
wouldn't that be weird though, like coming home from, you know, the school year and just being like, so what went on this year? You have no idea. You know,
see, that'd be like a corny line that they would put in the movie at the very end.
That's the end of it, Ben. That's like a flash screen right at the end.
You heard it first, folks.
Yeah.
MuggleNet.com's What Will Happen in Half-Blood Prince and Deathly Hallows Films. There you go, Emerson.
There we go.
There's a new book idea.
You're a machine.
He's thinking now.
But it's got to come out after The Life and Lies of Mikey Boucher.
Yeah. That's going to be a bestseller, that one.
It's going to be.
It's going triple platinum.
Yeah.
Triple books go platinum?
Yeah. It's not an album. Or is
they
it
do.
An album?
Well, like, could.
It would be an album of...
Are you pursuing a Wizard Rock career?
Maybe. I'm pursuing a Wizard Rock career.
Mikey, the audiobook would go triple platinum.
The audiobook.
Read by Stephen Mikey Fry.
Stephen Fry.
Yeah.
And Jim Dale combined. Anyway, back to Ron Weasley.
Actually, I would want to do Mikey's voice on the audiobook. Sorry.
You both come up.
Uh-oh, they have to do this together.
Oh, jeez.
I'm scared.
This is going to be a well-rehearsed question.
It's going to stump us.
Or complain about us.
No.
Okay. Nice shirt.
Okay. I'm Sarah, and this is my twin sister, Bethany.
We're actually from a family of seven kids, and we fall in the same place where Fred and George do.
And there's six girls in the family and one boy. It's really weird. But anyways, like, coming from a family as big as ours, and, you know, it's the inverse of the Weasleys, you know, it's very easy to understand where Ron's coming from. He's constantly being outshone by his brothers, and when you're in a big family, you really have to, like, strive to find your own place where you fit in the family. Mm-hmm. And, like, Fred and George had their thing, and Percy had his weird thing where he kind of disappeared.
Power hungry.
Yeah. And, you know, Bill and George were, like, the cool older brothers, and Ginny was the only girl. She automatically had her place. And then, you know, Harry comes to school, and he becomes friends, you know, with Harry Potter, and he's being outshone again. And he's just kind of, like, chilling there, like, what's going on?
I think it said a lot, really, when Ron turned around and came back. You know, it's twice as hard to come back than it is to stick with it. And I think it really does. Joe is right. It says something about his heart. He knows what it's like to be loyal to his family. Like, he's stuck with it, and he's going to stick with it. He's stuck with it.
Careful. You're right in front of the speaker.
That was well said.
And, you know, very well said. It only took a few chapters for him to come back, unlike Percy, where it took him, like, two books. So I think it shows a lot about Ron's character, where it's, like, 40 pages versus like two whole novels. Like at the very end of the last one.
Yeah.
That was kind of weird though, wasn't it? How like Percy shows up out of nowhere. He's like, guys, I'm back on your side now.
I'm sorry. Well, I know.
At least that was explained. Percy said, like, I'd be giving it a lot of thought, but I couldn't really say anything in the ministry, otherwise they would have killed me.
Yeah, but you think like they check him for Imperius Curses and Polyjuice Potion and they'll just accept it, that it was him.
Yeah, because I sort of thought he might have been. He might have been two-faced. He might have been trying to work for the ministry.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Kill
Harry. I didn't trust him personally.
Didn't
was
trust
anyone
him
like,
either.
Oh, wow, Percy's back? Thank God. Were you? Or do you have a question? Oh, okay.
All right,
good.
Well, come on up.
Like, I just can't. Are you giving away that Dobby? Because we'll just take it.
Oh, wow.
We'll glue it to the top of the car.
That is the best idea I've ever
heard.
Dobby
is free! Where can you buy that? Weren't those for sale? No. Oh. Free?
Wow.
Walmart?
Mikey, can we stop there on the way home?
Let's go to Walmart.
Apparently
let's get
hood
ornaments for the cars.
Rollback. Oh, okay.
We'll glue like 7 to the top, so there's just a swarm of Dobbies on top
of
the car.
We gotta get a wolf for Alex's car. Just have like this werewolf thing going right at the front.
We might have to take him out to the car just for a second.
We'll
bring him right back, but just for a second.
Yeah, we'll have like 15 straight state trooper cars like outside in like a minute. Like child abuse.
Yeah, because at 80 miles an hour, that could look quite real.
So,
what did you do to that poor kid's nose?
So what were we talking about again?
We're waiting for a question for Ron Weasley.
Hi, my name's Mary. We drove about 2.5 hours to get here from Columbus. My gosh, is this countryside. A lot of people from Columbus. I just wanted to say from a mom's point of view that I always admired Ron because he had to always overextend himself in order to be able to do the things with Harry and work with Harry and sometimes save Harry from himself. And so I just wanted to say I think he grew a lot in that position, and I was always really impressed with him.
Mikey?
I'm speechless. I don't know. I'm trying to think of something witty to say, I agree.
It's very fitting, too, because a lot of people have been saying that in The Order of the Phoenix, the film, he really made a turnaround. It's the real Ron, so to speak. But, yeah, that's a good point. Someone came up to us yesterday after the show. It was a mother. And to Jamie and Ben and I. And she was saying that what was she responding to? Something about a mother's love. Never doubt a mother's love. She was convinced that Mrs. Weasley had killed Bellatrix.
I reread the book to us. Remember, like one of the shows in the book when Molly goes after Bellatrix because she goes, "Stay away from my daughter, you witch!" And
with a slight change.
It says a curse flew at Bellatrix. It never says what curse. And I find it really hard to believe that Molly Weasley would use Avada Kedavra like to kill, even though I understand it's like a mother's protective love and all that. But one of the things that makes me really not believe it and think it's more like a stunning spell is because the book is from Harry's point of view, and it says Harry knew exactly what was going to happen, just like what happened to her cousin Sirius. Before he fell through the veil, shock in the face of Bellatrix and everything. And the spell that actually hit Sirius was a stunning spell. And so I think Molly actually used a stunning spell, and it caught Bellatrix off guard, and she went down. And then she was probably rounded up afterwards and went to Azkaban, like all the other Death Eaters.
Yeah.
But I find it really hard to believe that Molly Weasley would use.
Well, we said that it's because she's so nice, she doesn't have the potential to kill. But then the lady came up and said, don't ever underestimate a parent's love for their child, and that anyone could do it if put in the same situation.
Yeah.
So we weren't really sure about that.
Yeah. But the description was the same as what. The description was the same as what was described when Sirius was killed by Bellatrix.
When Sirius.
Square in the chest.
But it was a stunning spell, not a killing spell.
And now I'm all ticked off, too, because nobody posed that question to Joe in the web chat. I don't know.
They said she had like 115,000 questions, though. So
yeah, so she
can we give her a little bit of a break?
There were two questions up there. Do you still want to?
I think it's time we can probably start taking some
general
questions.
Yeah, let's take some
too.
General questions about the book, where the fandom's going, is MuggleCast done?
Favorite scenes, maybe?
You can come up.
Come on up.
Yeah.
Anyone have a favorite scene they want to tell us about?
Yeah.
Have us kind of discuss or something?
All right.
Come on up, get in line.
Oh, sorry. We're like, no, you can stay here.
Stay here.
All right, I'm Alex. I'm 13. I'm from Cleveland. Woo!
Cleveland rocks!
But, one thing that I was kind of wondering, and before Deathly Hallows, this was kind of like a theory between me and my friends, like, why the Dursleys never had any, like, Obliviator visits? Like, and we were thinking, well, does that mean, like, Petunia's a witch or something? But, like, and Joe didn't really explain that in Deathly Hallows, and we were wondering, like, what that meant.
Has the Ministry just accepted that since Harry stays with
them? Probably. I mean, there's probably special circumstances with Harry.
Well, also with family, like Hermione's families don't get obliviated.
Yeah.
They're the family. And also, you know, Petunia grew up with her sister as a witch, and she even wanted to go to Hogwarts. We know that.
Yeah. I'm sure there are exceptions to the law when it relates to Muggleborns, and Harry probably has the same.
So, yeah, that makes sense. Good question, though.
Hi, I'm Megan. I'm from Ashtabula. And I was just commenting on or thinking about what you were talking about with Mrs. Weasley. And before, when they first started dueling, wasn't there something in the book about how Harry noticed that both women were fighting to kill and that they were really going at it? It was mentioned in the book, so I was just...
No, it was actually... I was reading the book, like, word for word, and actually, they don't really even duel. She comes right at her and does one spell. It's the big duel is between everybody, is between the other two.
Because I swear it says that they were going, like, that both women were fighting to kill.
I thought I remember that they circled each other.
Where'd you get that from?
It's the last chapter.
I don't know. That's just
that makes so much sense.
Maybe I'm totally wrong, but
well, it was before they. I mean, when they first started dueling. I mean, it's not when she actually killed her or stunned her or whatever. But when they first started dueling, that Harry noticed.
I think
that
they just circle each other, and they never like. There's like.
We have the UK one, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
I mean. Well, they had the pages
right here. Both women were fighting to kill.
Yeah, 7:36.
That's right at the bottom.
Wow.
I don't know. So that's why I thought that she was.
Then it
says. So Bellatrix is dead then. Sorry, Mikey, you were wrong.
That's probably, wow. Although, well, it doesn't clearly state that though, so I mean, we can't
why
go
would
out
Bellatrix?
Yeah, but then it says right there, Molly's cursed sword beneath. It doesn't say which curse he used.
But what they could be. So
I still like to think Molly Weasley will make pancakes for everyone but and not kill Bellatrix Lestrange, because I think that's just wrong.
If
killing's
they were fighting
bad.
To kill. If Joe said they were fighting to kill, I think it could be assumed that they were.
And it does say that, you know, that jets of light were flying from the wands, so they were clearly dueling.
Yeah.
I honestly, when I first read it, I thought that she'd actually killed her, but then when you were talking a second, I thought, oh, maybe I misread it, because I've only read the book once at this point, so.
Has anyone read it more than once? Someone said they read it three times already. Yeah. Twice. Yeah, a couple times.
Once.
Twice.
Once.
I haven't read it at all yet.
Once.
Is it good?
Twice.
We're all due for a reread here soon, but
I read the Spark Notes, Ben. Anyway,
right. I have the audiobook. I never actually read it.
Oh, okay.
Just listen.
Let's go first.
I'm Corey. I'm from Kent, and I was just wondering who Voldemort thought Snape's source was in Chapter 1 at the Malfoys when he's telling him
he has
the
a reliable source. Yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted to know who that source was, like. I don't know who it could be.
Did we get it cleared up? Wasn't it Mundungus who?
But it wasn't a real source. It was the fake source. Whose name was pretending to be a source just in front of Voldemort, right?
No. Yeah, it was Mundungus because he says Dumbledore tells Snape to confound Mundungus and tell him to suggest the seven Potters, the seven. And
yeah.
It's him that also gives him the actual proper date, and so that's how. Snape tells Voldemort.
Yeah.
Okay. Am I right, Ben Chain?
You're right.
Thank you. Just wanted to double check.
Let's get right here. Think you have a favorite scene? You got a really excited one.
Hi, I'm DJ. I'm from Broadview Heights. My favorite. Yeah.
Yeah, Broadview Heights.
No one knows that. Okay.
I do.
Yay.
Anyway.
Anyway, I have two favorite scenes. One is just the line, the Snape-shaped hole in the window.
Yeah.
That's just hilarious.
It's kind of like Roger Rabbit.
That's exactly how
right through the window.
My second favorite scene is when, like, Neville is being all like, oh, I just got this cut from, like, speaking out.
Yeah.
I got this cut from there. He's just being all bad and
he
stuff.
He was boasting about them, wasn't he?
He was, like, awesome.
Insane.
Neville's someone who really changed in this book, and that's why we had sort of I was speculating that he might have been the person that got the reprieve because he was acting so different in this novel. I thought maybe Joe would have considered killing him because he was so he grew so
he,
you know what I'm
why?
Saying
he did
why
too much
just because his
you're
head got a little
because
I'm saying his head got a little too big and maybe
so
he went out
him?
There and tried to duel someone and somebody killed him. Well, whether it's Bellatrix, because Bellatrix would have made
sense. You know, he did try to almost duel Voldemort. He just took a sword and was like, quack! and chopped off that snake's head and go flying through the air.
Yeah, I like your sound effects, Mikey.
I always use sound effects when I talk, and it's like in real life, too. It's weird.
On that Snape point as well, I've been thinking over the past couple of days, I've been reading the Snape scenes, and I feel so sorry for him now. I really feel sorry for him. I think he was one of my favorite characters, but
at the end of the chapter when he dies, and it says his last words are, "Look at me." It's obvious that the reason he said that is because one of the last things you see would be Lily's eyes.
It's important. But didn't you say something about Snape? That
you love Lily.
Because he abandoned Hogwarts, his portrait didn't go on the wall straight away, but she said that Harry would make sure it did.
Yeah.
Which I was very pleased about.
Yeah, that was interesting. We did learn a lot in this web chat. James always suspected that Snape harbored deeper feelings for Lily, which was a factor in James's behavior to Snape. I thought that was pretty interesting too.
And she also said that Snape and Lily could have fallen romantically in love had Snape not joined the Death Eaters.
The story would have been so different then.
Yeah, that would have been crazy.
Oh my god!
She said that Snape would have thought that Lily thought he was cool. That's the reason he did it, because it's associated with power.
Come on up. Oh, so kind. I was going to rip on you for the Harry and the Potters t-shirt.
I'm Stephanie.
Apparently I struck a nerve. I'm just saying, because this is a Remus Lupin's concert. That's all I'm saying. Here.
There's a lot of hostility around here, isn't there, Andrew? Very bad vibes.
Okay. I'm Steph, and I'm from Canton. And I was wondering, I had a little bit of trouble following the second movie. And I was wondering why the snake was following him through the tunnel and who that was and why. I don't know. I don't know.
Why the snake was following him?
Yeah.
The basilisk, you mean?
Yeah, who was it?
The basilisk.
It was the basilisk.
It was Slytherin's monster.
It was the beast. It was the beast in the chamber.
Was trying to kill him or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I had trouble. Okay. Thanks.
No problem.
Harry and the Potters.
Ow, she just stepped on my foot. Okay, I wasn't going to do this joke, and they all wanted me to, but since you guys ripped on Harry and the Potters, we have a knock-knock joke for you real quick, okay? And then I'll get to my real question. All right, so knock-knock.
Who's there?
Dead Hedwig.
That's not even funny. That's just mean. Really?
Wait. I have something that makes it better. Why did Harry cross the road?
Why?
Because Hedwig's dead.
That's so mean right there, too.
You wouldn't have the
wow, you know what?
That, would you?
I'm really sad. I liked Hedwig.
Your jokes
I'm not
going to
lie,
so
actually.
Bad.
I heard that. Like funny.
I heard it yesterday.
If we're doing Harry Potter jokes,
hey,
I got
we
a
all
good
talk
one.
At once?
Okay,
I got a good Harry Potter joke.
Okay, I
want
to do my question now because it's really a question. Okay. They never really explained what Dumbledore meant by his letter to Petunia about remember my last. And we kind of were talking earlier about it, that he was either referring to the letter that he sent to Petunia about Harry or his letter that the last letter he sent to Petunia about not being accepted into Hogwarts. And I want to know what you guys thought about it and what he actually meant by that, because nobody ever came out and said what exactly he meant.
Didn't we?
Well, I think remember my last would have to be referring to the letter that he left with Harry that night on the doorstep, because
I agree
that just makes the most sense. Remember my last, because at that point in time in Order of the Phoenix is when Harry was about to be expelled, about to be thrown out of the house. Vernon was saying the boy has to go, and then all of a sudden he changes his mind after talking to Lily. So I think it's pretty obvious that remember my last was referring to the letter he left with her.
Also, because probably in that letter Dumbledore explained the protection that Harry has while in their home.
Yeah,
I know.
Fair
I'm
point.
Saying. I'm okay. Agreeing with you, Ben Chain.
This one up here. Nice a lot question. Of questions today. Jeez.
I'm Amanda, and I'm from Canton. And I was wondering what you guys think happened to the Dursleys. Do you think Harry ever went back and tried to find them?
Or at least go hang out with Dudley, because apparently Dudley really likes
nice,
him.
Yeah.
Poor Dudley.
Can you imagine him and Big D hanging out?
I don't know.
Great punch, Big D.
I don't know if Harry would really be in a rush to go back to the Dursleys. Maybe just a visit, show them the kids, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Other than that, though, I mean, they never really had a relationship.
Awkward.
And even when Harry left Mr. Dursley, he couldn't even... He gave him a handshake, but he didn't say bye to him, right? It was just like a silent handshake, wasn't it?
And Joe also talked about that in the chat. She talked about what Petunia was going to say to Harry. Do you know what I mean? Did you read that part?
What are you saying?
I was saying that Joe also talked about, like, at that moment when Harry left, that Petunia acted like she was going to say something.
Oh, yeah,
But it said, like, she'd been so hardened about, you know, from, like, her magical hatred over the years that she wasn't able to
Yeah, you're right. That'd
go
be another,
forward.
That'd be another good question to ask Joe, because I sort of assumed that was going to be explained later in the book, because we were supposed to learn something more about Petunia, weren't we?
Yeah.
So, oh well. Hi.
Okay, my name's Kristen from Dublin. And first off, this Dobby statue here is really depressing me because I cried so hard when he died.
Does anyone have a knife and we can stab it through his heart?
No! Dobby is dead!
Let's be more realistic.
He looks kind of worried now.
Actually, yeah.
He does look rather corpse-like.
He knows he's going to die. I bet like a week ago that face was so happy, but now it's sort of...
smiling now. He's like... Anyway.
All right, my question was, do you think George would still run the joke shop now that Fred's dead?
Actually, Jo addressed that, too. She said that Ron actually went on to help George run the joke shop, and they made lots of money together.
So it's still Weasley's Wizarding Wheezes.
Yeah. It's over here.
My name's Katie. I'm from Maslin. This is more about my favorite scene, but from the epilogue, I thought it was cool how she showed everybody in the future and how everything was okay since Voldemort was gone.
And yeah.
I always thought that Ron and Hermione would end up together. And I think it's cool that Harry and Ginny, named one of their kids after Snape and Dumbledore since he found out that Snape was actually a good guy. So I just thought that was cool.
I agree. I thought that was such a nice touch.
The name Albus Severus was pretty interesting.
It isn't as bad as Scorpius, though, so there I go.
Scorpius.
We had a little 10-year-old come up to us at the show yesterday and said, what's up with the name Scorpius? I wouldn't like to be named Scorpius.
No, I wouldn't either.
That's pretty cute. We only have time for a couple more questions, so let's...
Hi, my name's Maggie. I'm from Broadview as well.
Broadview in the house.
I wanted to know if I was the only one who caught that Snape really liked Harry throughout all 7 novels, because there's that scene where he's talking to Dumbledore and Dumbledore tells him that Harry's going to die and Snape wigs out.
No, but I'd say that was because it's the son of the person he loved, not because it's because it's a human being. Snape doesn't, Snape does stuff because he's Snape.
Dumbledore asks him, he says, after all these years, have you come to love this or come to care for this boy that you despise so much? And Snape looks at him and says, always. Like he's always cared for Harry.
I don't remember that.
What?
He's talking about the...
he was talking about when Snape casts the Do Patronus, and you can't fake Patronus. So, it's a reflection of what you really feel. He says, still, about Lily's, about his love for Lily, and then Snape says, always, and then tears form in his eyes, which is very sad.
If anything, Snape would resent Harry because it's a constant reminder that he lost Lily to James Potter.
And the eyes.
And the eyes are what reminds him of Lily. And that's, again, why he died. Like Jamie said, let me look at your eyes.
Yeah.
And that's probably why when Harry was learning Occlumency, Snape was like, eye contact is essential, just so he could look into Lily's eyes.
All right,
I didn't think of that before.
We have time for 2 more questions, one over here and one over here. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
We'll talk after the show. We really got to wrap things up now.
I'm Alex, and I'm from Dayton. And I was just wondering, I know all the deaths were really sad, but to each of you, what did you think was the saddest death? Personally, for each of you.
Dobby. Because the way Jo described the death, I've said this in a few shows now, she would say Harry carried his small body.
Just these little
adjectives that made him look all small
Harry's
and innocent.
Got like a shovel out in the blaring hot sun, and he's digging this grave, and he could
Griphook was like, you're a crazy wizard or something, because he could have just dug it with magic, but instead he did it manually, which was a really nice way to pay tribute to Dobby, considering how much manual labor he does.
Mikey?
I'm going to say Dobby also. I was really sad with that. Maybe Mad-Eye, because it was kind of sad.
That came so quick.
And then his eye was just like, Umbridge had it, and I was just kind of like...
It was an insult to Mad-Eye's.
I know. I was like, wow, that's really mean. I liked Mad-Eye. He was cool.
Yeah, Jamie.
And
I wasn't really sad for anything, and I'm not just saying that. It's because when Sirius died, I didn't think I could feel any more emotion for any other character. He was my favorite character, bar no one, so I couldn't cry for Dumbledore or anyone in this book. But after reading this book and seeing how much Dumbledore has done, I think if I reread book 6, I might bawl. But Sirius was just so sad, and he was my favorite character. So that's why I didn't really feel sad about anything.
Ben?
I'm just,
I wasn't really...
Voldemort, maybe? He shed a tear?
Yeah.
When he died?
Actually, yes. Of all the characters, probably. No, I mean, Hedwig, I didn't really. It was just a bird. Mad Eye was old. Lupin and Tonks, they didn't even give him a death scene. And then besides that, I mean, Fred was pretty sad. I mean,
yeah.
That was kind of like the loss, you know. It maybe started kind of hit home. Like if Fred Weasley can get killed, anybody can.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Dobby, not sad for you?
It was sad.
It's just a house elf. Right?
Yeah, just a house elf. I mean,
he's not part of Spiel.
He's trying to make sure he alienates every single person in this crowd right now. I thought one of the coolest scenes of the whole book was after George lost his ear, and then Fred and George were just like, they were taking it completely in stride, making all these ear puns, you know, ear, your holiness, you know. I thought that was so cool.
So that was your favorite death?
Huh?
Yes, that was the most emotional death in the book?
I cried like a baby.
The loss of an ear.
When he lost his ear.
All right, one last question for today. I'm sorry, guys.
Hi, I'm Emily, 18, from New Hampshire. Yeah, college tour. So I noticed when the locket, Harry was putting on the locket, and he's talking about getting heavy and sort of burning into his chest. I was kind of remembering Lord of the Rings. Yeah. So I was really glad that Ron actually left because it made it different. And so there wasn't that whole... It made it a different dynamic around the Horcrux instead of having it be this sort of thing that has its own mind the same way. It's not taking it from person to person. So I just thought that was really... It came really close to almost making me feel a little bit uncomfortable with the parallels I was drawing. But, so, I don't know. I just thought of that earlier and hadn't gotten up until later, so... Also, my friend read Aeschylus, which is that quote at the very beginning of the book... And he said that the basic idea behind that is that heroes will live and have a happy life. And so I thought that was really interesting in how it ended up turning out.
So if we'd read that first, we'd have known that Harry was going to live.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
What did we think of that?
It was really interesting. I thought it was really nice how Joe had those two quotes in there. I didn't even read them because I just wanted to get to the book. But then also in the U.S. edition, it says, what does it say exactly?
We now present
the seventh and final installment. That was really nice little touch there. But, you know, in the second edition, that's just going to be reviews about the book. It won't actually say that there. So, anyway, we want to thank everyone.
We have one more person.
Oh, sorry, Alex, I forgot.
Alex, he has something to say.
All these rehearsals, and I screw up.
Of course.
Alex of the Remus Lupins, round of applause for Alex. He's going to do a little Wizard Rock in a minute.
Yeah, I did.
Alex, what was the saddest death for you?
Well, Hedwig, but Hedwig's not actually dead, so it's okay.
Don't start this, please.
I think Hedwig made a Horcrux. We used to hear about it.
That's the encyclopedia. Yes, whatever you just said.
Okay. Yeah, we are going to do a raffle real quick to give away the Dobby, I think it was.
No. Enough was trying to give her the Dobby away.
I tried, guys. Like,
and the winner is Mikey B.
Oh.
We
got a copy of Deathly Hallows.
Oh, a copy Deathly of Deathly Hallows. Uh-oh, you lost one.
There's the winner.
That's it, right? It's got to be.
Are you picking?
Sure, I'll pick.
Andrew Sims
really exciting
pick.
For me.
Who's going to pick Andrew
Sims? Pick from the bottom. Winner of the copy is Ashley Grega. Phone number.
Yeah,
I shouldn't say that. Ashley Grega.
Hey, Ashley. Come get a free copy of the book.
Where are you? It's over here.
Yes!
Yay!
Come on! Yay! Big hand for Ashley. Come on. Yay! All right. So.
Don't move. I have your phone number if you do.
So, hi.
All right.
Anyway.
Well, we want to thank everyone for coming out today. Make sure you stay here for some awesome Wizard Rock from Alex and his band.
And also, remember, MuggleNet t-shirts and MuggleCast t-shirts available.
Momentarily.
And Remus Lupin CDs. Don't forget that.
Yes, of course.
I should also just point out real quick that this is the first and last time MuggleNet t-shirts will ever be available for sale. On the website, 6 months ago, we were asked by Warner Brothers to stop selling them. So we have our few remaining shirts available for sale here tonight.
I'm wearing one. They're pretty cool, guys.
And also, we have the MuggleCast tour shirts, which will also be here.
One time only.
One time only.
Except
so, guys, get ready for Teddy Lupins. The Teddy Lupins, right? Because Remus is dead.
One last quick notice. We're gonna do the meet and greet after the Wizard Rock concert. So make sure everyone sticks around for that. Then we'll be happy to meet everyone afterwards. All right.
And here comes the book for you.
Here comes the book. Yay. Get reading. It's a long book. Thank you, everyone, for coming. We'll see you next time.